try and give me a paint a picture of what Manchester and Liverpool would have been like in the 1830s or around that time. Maybe for somebody coming from abroad and seeing it for the first time.
A foreigner coming to England in the 1830s and going to Manchester or Liverpool would have been struck by a whole lot of things. Firstly, the bustle, the enormous amount of energy and movement, particularly of the machines, but also of the people. They'd have been struck by the dirt, the filth, the coal, the dust, the smog. They'd have been struck by the poverty, the huge number of migrants and very poor people living in rags and filth and poor housing, but also the wealth, the obvious wealth of a small proportion of the population. And they'd have been struck above all that such great cities could have emerged in the Midlands of England, larger than almost anywhere in the world, so quickly, and obviously focused around a new kind of economic system.
Right. I mean, was it... Well, there's so many people pressed into a small space. Was that new, that idea in Britain? I mean, or in Europe at least. You know, you got so many thousands of people crammed into... And presumably that had the way people were living was due to that. I mean, they were all living on top of each other. Maybe you could even describe maybe how living in a cellar must have been like in Liverpool.
Of course, there'd been cities in Europe and the rest of the world for long thousands of years. But what was new was the compression of people. There had been cities with lots of people in them, but here they seemed to be very, very tightly up against each other, perhaps because it was more efficient economically to have people very, very close together. They were close to their workplace. And this compression meant that they used every available space, upwards, downwards, the streets, the cellars. And this was one of the reasons why they were such ghastly places, because visitors particularly commented on the cellar dwellers, the people living in basements and attics, who lived with hardly any light, hardly any air, in great poverty and often sickly. And if you went into one of these cellars, you'd have seen women half unclothed, trying to feed their babies, children falling over each other, nothing to sleep on, hardly any furniture. Real destitution, something as bad as anything you would now find in Calcutta, Bombay or anywhere else.
Trying to get to this sort of idea of such a big population living in such poverty, you would expect that that you know there would be a lot of death, but that didn't seem to be the case.
Visitors were also struck by something else, which was unusual. All the cities of the past had built up in size and become compressed like this, but nearly always some epidemic or plague or dysentery or typhoid or something else had come along and cut back. Cities were famous for killing off surplus populations. The countryside bred the children, they came into the cities and they died. All cities in history had been like this. But suddenly, from about the middle of the 18th century in England, for the first time, cities began to be safe places. They were very sickly, they were very poor, they were very dirty, and yet people didn't die. They began to actually produce their own populations instead of killing off the populations of the countryside. And this was an extraordinary thing, without which you couldn't have had the urban revolution and the industrial revolution, cities which didn't mop up and kill off the rural population.
As in a city, Alan, when you congregate all these people and you get a lot of poor conditions.
Okay. One of the great contradictions in history had been that in order to make cities efficient, you had to have lots of people living in them, close by and working together. And this is economically very efficient. But unfortunately, as they all mingle together, the disease rate rises. And all the cities of Europe and India had been falling into this pattern in Italy, Spain, other places, France, Paris. They'd all suffered this contradiction that the rural country people had come into the cities and died, so the cities could never get past a threshold. This seems a very universal law, and yet there were one or two places on earth where it was contradicted, and one of them was England from the middle of the 18th century, but it wasn't the only place like this.
When they grew large, what happened to them?
Ever since the urban revolution, thousands of years ago, cities had been getting bigger, but they always came up against a dead end, which was that as they grew bigger, so the population became sicker, and epidemics and other diseases always killed them off. This had hit Europe in about the 16th, 17th centuries, Paris, Madrid, other European cities, were so dirty and dangerous that they killed off the rural population. So this was a trap that almost all the world seemed to face, certainly India, certainly Islam, certainly Western Europe. But not England, mysteriously, from about the middle of the 18th century, fell away from this pattern. Something odd happened. People, of course, died, but they didn't die in the sufficient numbers, and particularly the children and the infants. But it wasn't just England where this happened. It happened in one other place in the world a bit earlier, and that was in Japan. The largest city in the world in the 18th century was probably Tokyo, Edo. The two largest cities were London and Tokyo, and they kept growing together. And surprisingly, these were two of the safest cities, and in fact, that's why they became the biggest cities in the world. So there was something mysterious about London and British cities from the middle of the 18th century, and about Japanese cities from a little earlier, that allowed them to go against this universal law that cities will kill everyone who comes into them.